Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference Podcast. This podcast features a session presented by Joanne Kasuth, Vice President for Operations and CIO at the Franklin W. Olin College of Engineering. Her session is titled, In the Hot Seat, Collaboration, a Must or Time-Consuming Bust.
Thank you, everybody, for coming to In the Hot Seat, a new feature in our program this year. It's an opportunity there where we have campus leaders volunteer their talents and encourage you to challenge them. So please welcome Joanne.
I thought I'd just do a little bit of framing for you on the collaboration issue. So there are a number of benefits to collaborations, and we'll talk through some of my experiences, and I really encourage you to share yours and share some questions you have. Some of the benefits include solving problems that you can't solve alone. We've seen a number of those instances at Olin when we were a startup, and the first question was, okay, how do we do email? Now, this was, more than 10 years ago, so we didn't quite say, oh, Google Apps was the answer. And was like, well, we'll just run it through the University of Iowa because that's where our president was and come up with solutions. So some collaborations happen naturally. Innovation and untapped opportunity. So one of the challenges I think we all face is time. And as we're trying to juggle time and figure out how to make the most of our resources, we put a lot of people in a room, we get a lot of different ideas that come together. And those ideas tend to be ones that we wouldn't necessarily have thought of ourselves. Career path and development, especially at smaller institutions, it's tough to create really large teams. You don't have web developer 1, 2, 3, and 4 on a team. But this way, when you work with other institutions, there are a number of career potential jobs that folks can have. They apply at other institutions, but they learn how to work together and get a sense of those other schools by working at their various projects, leveraging resources, and then just the networking, building the cohort and the community. So some of the requirements for collaboration, leadership. So one example we had at Babson and Olin was when we first started, the way that collaboration was thought of was the two chairs of the board shook hands and said, you will collaborate. So that's one model. We'll talk a little later about how well that did or didn't work. Another one is a more centralized model, and what we ended up doing in that sense was building relationships but having a liaison at each campus responsible for all the relationships to flow through. So that was sort of phase two. Now we're in a more decentralized mode, and we'll talk a little bit later about a variety of projects we have going across Babson, Olin, and Wellesley. And I'd say that's much more egalitarian. We're trying to drive it from the students on up. And then the environment has to be conducive, and there have to be some type of rewards for collaborating. Collaboration's hard. It takes time, takes effort. You're building a lot of relationships, and how do you recognize that, particularly now that we have faculty working together on different projects? Is it course release time? How is the recognition there for something that may or may not be valued the same through the various promotion processes on the different campuses? So some of the collaborative behaviors, introspection, I mean, the ability to take sort of that step back and say, let's take a hard look at what we're doing internally before we start critiquing what everybody else is doing and try to look at something in the middle that might work for all of us. Tolerance. So one of the things we're going to talk about in details at Olin, Babson, and Wellesley, we did a joint Grand Challenges Summit for engineering education. It was the first time the three schools had worked together on logistics, on program committee, and hosted it actually on the Wellesley campus. There were three very different cultures between a liberal arts college, a business school, and an engineering college. So communication was among the most challenging issue that we had, in addition to just how people ran meetings, how people facilitated meetings, what kind of notes got generated for meetings. So it can get a little crazy as you get going. But having that tolerance for whatever happens and having someone being in the position to coordinate, so liaisoning works really well because you need to have all the campuses or all your internal departments be aware of what's going on. Communication, everyone knows, is critical. Commitment. It takes commitment because a lot of times you make mistakes and things don't necessarily go very well. So at this one event that we ran, within the last week of the event, we had two of our keynote speakers out of four cancel and had to come up with two other ones. And watching the reactions from the different administrators on the different campuses and come up with the plans was a very interesting experience. Flexibility, problem solving, and obviously creativity are all important behaviors. Some of this was on the CIO listserv recently. Casey Green's Campus Computing Survey in 2009 talked about collaboration in terms of the participation in open source tools and open source applications and why people do that. And that's one example of another kind of collaboration. Some of the internal experiences that we've had at Olin revolve around the various departments. So we're a small institution. Most of our departments have fewer than 10 people in them. On the academic side, we have no academic departments, and we do not have tenure. So we're a very different organization. But in terms of IT and communications, for one example, so our communication department actually is responsible for the web content, and IT is responsible for executing on the web strategy. But we've actually partnered in hiring students that we then task with going and collecting a lot of the content to keep our web pages fresh. So that's one example of a partnership. Another is during our ERP implementation. I'm sure folks have shared the pain of ERP implementations. Anybody in the room done that? So quite a few folks have done that. So when it comes down to having to move data from about 6 or 8 different sources, we actually got groups of people from postgraduate planning, institutional advancement, IT, sat everybody in a room and created this team that attacked the data in terms of what's the most up-to-date and contact information to make sure that what we were starting with was good. And that was one example of collaborating throughout the various departments at the college. When I worked for Wheelock College, we had colleges at the Fenway. So the most amusing story I could tell about that is early on in the process, they were talking about connecting the campuses with fiber, and this is in the Longwood Medical area in Boston. And so I drew this design on a piece of paper. About 7 years later, after I had left Wheelock, the person that was now working for the colleges of the Fenway came to me with that piece of paper encased in plastic. And they were actually executing on that fiber 7 years later. So that speaks to time, but at least it speaks to the fact that it moved forward and they actually had documentation of some sort. The Boston Consortium, in Boston, that's 15 schools, including big schools like MIT and Northeastern, schools like Bentley, Babson, Wellesley, Olin, Emerson. And right now we're doing collaboration on a number of different initiatives. One of them is particularly around data warehousing and our medical plans. Another one is around looking at disaster recovery and business continuity. And if I talk a little bit about Babson and Olin, so at the start, Babson College provided a lot of our services for us at Olin, and we basically paid them for it. And as time went on, we've gradually taken some of those services and brought them back into Olin or outsourced them to a third party. So it's been a juggle in terms of managing the relationships. So you don't want to send the message that, okay, you guys are not doing a good job. It's just our priorities at Olin have shifted. Our cost structure is different. We can do some different things. So that was a little bit of a challenge from that perspective. We have cross-registration among all our schools, so Babson, Olin, Wellesley, as well as Brandeis. And the initial partnership was based on we'll do what we can when we can. And we've recently focused the relationship more on Babson, Olin, and Wellesley. And you can see from the Olin and Babson Foundation, the goal was to collaborate in every way, but still stay separate and encompass all areas of the college. So we've had collaborative experiences in all these venues. We have about 30 different teams working on projects across the three colleges. And this conference that we had, so one of the challenges with the three of us together was definitely along the lines of trying to figure out how long it should take to do things, who should actually be the ultimate responsible party, and actually doing joint fundraising. So the biggest answer that we have for how was it was really a lot of culture shock. And these are the usual collaboration concerns that you would have around resources, time, the care and feeding, keeping an inventory of your successes and failures, and institutional change. Pain points that I'm sure all of you in the audience can relate to, having done any kinds of collaborations, internal or external. And I'm sure you have other ones to share, but including teamwork and funding. And these are sort of my short list of hints and tips from the experiences that I've had about building relationships, listening, accepting the concerns of others as legitimate, understanding conflict can be constructive and learning how to deal with that, asking a whole lot of questions, letting people own things jointly, and trying to start with win-win scenarios. So with that kind of context, I want to open it up to questions from my seat. At a small institution, collaboration for us is a necessity. And we need to find ways to do it because it's the only way we can think big and be able to execute on the thinking big. So somebody out there is going to have questions to warm up my seat. So if I could just rephrase the question, was around a larger institution inadvertently co-opting a smaller collaborator during a process. How do you see that and how do you respond to it? So I think certainly we've seen that, and one of the challenges is that to see what kinds of agreements you have for service level. So in a lot of cases, the larger institution is providing services to the smaller institution, and that's pretty clear. But trying to come up with the value proposition for the smaller institution is what creates a lot of challenges. So we've come up with a number of those, and particularly around students. Students can add a lot of value by providing their experiences from a different perspective. So one's an engineering school, one's a liberal arts school, one's a business school, so that tends to work really well. And at times there are a number of instances where when it's a collaboration strictly with an exchange of money And for services, we find that doesn't work as well as if you actually barter. If you pick out where you have your experience and you have your value add, and you don't change money, and you just encourage the collaboration around the relationship building and the bartering, that's tended to work better for us in some instances than others. Question is, do the most valuable collaborations require a senior mandate, and do I find that to be true? I think it requires senior support versus mandate. In my seat, we've seen mandates not work by, you know, senior administrators or the trustees shaking hands saying, do it, didn't necessarily result in it being done. But understanding that there's support for it, it will be valued, that there's a process around proposals that you want to drive from all areas of the institution, that's worked best for us. But certainly if the president thought this had no value, it wouldn't work at all. I think it's just not a mandate. It's about understanding their support for it and having the openness and the cultures to move forward and bring proposals up. It absolutely is not the natural thing to do to collaborate. Everybody sort of has some of their own interests and agendas. So one of the things that, from my experiences, has to happen is you need to work on building relationships that are a lot of times one-on-one, and they build to one-on-two, and then they build to sort of departments, and you get word of mouth to spread the fact that these relationships are actually good things and some cool things happen, and there are some opportunities that come out of that. Another way is to create social events. So one of the things we do is try to get the various areas, like in IT, get the groups together to just meet each other socially, talk, get to know each other, to help promote those relationships. And obviously at larger institutions, there's work to do just within the departments and cross-departmentally, as well as with some of your other institutional partners. But the socialization part, I think you're building a norm and you're trying to build the culture of collaboration. You need some successes. You get those early on. It becomes easier to then promote more of that. And people turn around and say, hey, when I worked with so-and-so, we managed to do this, and I don't think we could have done that by ourselves. And it really does build that out. It seems a little bit simplistic, but really having that experience is what builds the culture from the ground up, from what I've seen. So the question is, have we been able to quantify the collaboration in some way? What we've done is create an annual report. I can't give you a quantification of here's a formula. We've certainly seen savings. I can give you examples. In some cases, we are sharing scheduling software. So the vendors work with us. We have one license that applies to all three campuses. We all pay a third of the maintenance. That piece definitely is quantifiable, probably to the tune of around $30,000 savings a year for each of us in terms of that software. We also have shared security systems for public safety between Babson and Olin. Again, probably split the cost on that about halfway. We have a direct fiber connection over to Babson for disaster recovery and backup, and we're trying to build Wellesley into that loop. So that means that we don't have to outsource things somewhere else, and we don't charge each other for that. Comes back to that bartering piece. We have audio-visual technicians at Babson. They have more than we do. They come over and help us. In exchange, we send our network guys over there to help them with security. So again, that sort of bartering methodology, but you could probably put some price tags around that as well. We actually have a sustainability certificate across the three campuses that the faculty have worked on, and those have been can be quantified in terms of there's been release time costs for that. But on the other hand, there's now also opportunities for students at all three schools that weren't there before. So we're partway there, and we have an annual report that's much more descriptive, and I'm sure as time goes on and we have more projects to talk about, we're certainly trying to keep track of the investment of time and resources and also what we're saving or what we're adding to the value that all of us have. So the question was around, do we have a handle on what the costs are for our processes, producing invoices if we're thinking about sharing transaction systems? So I would say that in some cases we have a better handle than others. What we found to be more critical than actually the cost is the workflow. Because what we found is that in a lot of institutions, in my department, I have 20 people. So now if I'm going to work with you and you've got 10 here and 5 here, and now we've got 30 working on it, and we're going to put this together, that means I must be going to lose people. So then I'm going to lose power and influence if you equate that to people within your own institution, and that whole kind of political conversation starts to take place. So what we found is the workflow has actually been more critical. We don't have a great handle on a lot of different processes. We do on things like what our bandwidth costs us, what transactions are if we track our email, what security breaches, if any, cost us, and we do certainly have them around producing an invoice or how many invoices we have to chase when they age with 30, 60, or 90 days and that kind of information. So we have some of that. We're not as good as we should be with that, and certainly as the relationship moves forward, we need to be able to quantify that more, especially if we start looking at the support needed to work through the ERP type of system questions. So what steps have we made towards chargeback implementations for faculty and other issues? So we have joint appointments for faculty. So I'll be honest with you, this has been a nightmare. because the faculty need to have a home institution because you need to pay their benefits somewhere in their salary. And so then if you've got a faculty member from Olin who's now teaching at Wellesley and teaching at Babson, their home institution is Olin, they have Olin's benefit package, and they're being charged back to Babson and Wellesley, come back. So one of the things that started to happen is the presidents have started to have these conversations around, okay, here are going to be the rules around joint appointments and really structuring the joint appointments such that there'll be certain assumptions about teaching load across the three campuses so that we'll be able to have some sort of standard template because we've had a lot of one-offs. And to complicate that, when faculty get to the point that they might want to take advantage of early retirement or things like that, they'll go to 50%. So it gets very messy on the faculty side in terms of those kind of chargebacks. The administrative side is easier for the chargebacks, and again, on the administrative side, we actually try to keep those to a minimum because we don't want the overhead and look at how much we're trading back and forth.
Joanne, do you have any recommended strategies for bringing people back to a table who have become disenchanted with collaboration for a variety of reasons and how you kind of bring them back so you can start that process again?
In terms of bringing them back to the table if they're disenchanted with collaboration, really it's about having the conversation again and saying, okay, so what didn't work or what really turned you off from that? In a lot of cases, it's the individuals they're working with and not necessarily the process, so that's been my experience. So a lot of times whoever is the liaison or project manager for the collaboration has to sit down and sort of be a counselor to everybody about, okay, it's not working with this person. What is it that's not working? Is it something that you can solve? And or should you just change up the teams? One way to actually not get in that bind from the beginning is to create teams that are bigger than two or three people. So if you have teams that are sort of five people, it makes it a lot easier if there's some dissension going on for the rest of the team to continue to make progress. The other folks see progress and they buy into the progress, so you're not exactly moving backward and you don't have to deal with just all the one-on-one relationship building.
I have a question from our online audience. They ask, would you be in favor of a collaboration mandate at your institution?
I wouldn't be in favor of a collaboration mandate at my institution. The Olin culture of innovation essentially means that we don't have mandates on anything. What we do is ask for innovative ideas and get support and run forward with those innovative ideas. And sometimes the support is small and you've got your team of, say, five or six people and you run forward with it and it succeeds and people go, wow, that was great. We should look at how we build on it. Other times you do it and it fails. So I think if we mandated it, it would really put a crimp in the desire of the people in the organization to come up with innovative ideas. So for example, one of the ideas that came out of our group from Babson, Olin, and Wellesley was around space. So at Olin, we have a lot of classrooms built for 30 to 48 people. At Wellesley, they have a lot of larger classrooms that are underutilized. We all complain about space. We all want to have events and generate revenue. So one of the things that we've done is put this team together that's looking about how we share space across the three campuses. So maybe these classes actually go take place over there, and yes, we'd have to deal with the shuttle service and do a few things, but that actually would be a much less expensive solution for the campuses than all of us going out and building new buildings and or just restrict the number of classes that we offered, cutting that down from what we have now. So that came out of not having a mandate. We've had our student government get together and actually drive collaboration across student clubs and events, and I think if that was mandated, the students would say, oh, it's the administration telling us to do that, and they really wouldn't have a whole heck of a lot of interest in that. I think knowing that the presidents have some discretionary funding and knowing that there are proposals and the opportunity for anybody to bring those up works better for us. Now, at a larger institution, if you're trying to sort of turn a bigger, you know, battleship or something like that and you need to build pockets of collaboration, I think a mandate could work in some instances, but I would still advocate for, within those smaller pockets, focusing on the innovation and letting the faculty, staff, and students drive some things forward to get those smaller successes. Other questions?
When you have a collaborative group, and we've been stymied in the past with our process because, well, say you're collaborating with a group of 10, and two are not on board, it tends to stop. Do you have a specific process as in, 50% is yes or no, or do you have a very strict process about your collaborative projects, or is it on an individual basis?
We don't have standards yet around the collaborative projects. It tends to be on an individual basis, but really the trick is, within these groups, you need to have drivers, okay? So right up front, when we put these collaborative groups together across the campuses, my colleagues sat down and said, okay, here are the people we think would be good to have on this group, and at least one of those, if you're all familiar with Myers-Briggs and the driver personality types, each of those groups has at least one driver personality type on it. And that has been effective for us because at times there is going to be a lull. sometimes you have to take a step back. Just having someone that these folks get online, they create the meetings, they set up the meetings, they follow through on it, they all produce notes, they're on a wiki. You know, we share the information on a wiki. So keeping the information flowing, keeping the people engaged is something important. The biggest challenge we get is people that start to worry about their jobs. If we're going to collaborate, does that mean that we're going to have fewer people? And does that mean that these positions are going to go away? And what we've answered, and I think what's been true to date, is that the positions don't go away. What happens is the nature of your work changes. So the nature of your work is now about collaboration. And while you're collaborating, you're also still doing, whether it's your technical things in IT, your human resource recognition events in HR, your faculty that are still teaching. But a big chunk of your work is now around collaboration. And one of the ways to really recognize that is to build into your performance reviews collaboration as an indicator of how successful your staff is. That tells them that you value it. That tells them that they're getting rewarded, in a sense, for that collaborative piece of it. It's changing work. And change, like any kind of change, is difficult. So the question is, in these tough financial times, some of the motivation for collaboration may in fact be savings, and how do you motivate the people if in fact some of those people you're motivating to participate in the collaboration might be the ones whose jobs don't exist, you know, in a couple weeks. I think one of the challenges is that a lot of institutions have already gone through position cuts or attrition or layoffs, and so people have seen that happen with or without the collaboration piece, so this might be a unique time in terms of the finances, but what tends to happen is within the three institutions that I'm used to working with, there are positions that come up on a regular basis. And so part of what we've seen actually happen is that people, say, in a purchasing department in one area, see an open position at another institution in purchasing that's a little different, and they decide that they might want to apply for that position. What we end up doing a lot of the times is saying, wait, is there a way we can split the position? So I think sometimes the opportunity comes up where you don't have to necessarily cut the position, but you can actually look across and see how you could share yet another position. And you do that because there's a position attrition somewhere, there's an open job. Say it was Olin would get the benefit of not having that position. And so I think a lot of unique opportunities can come out of it that you don't necessarily see. I think the other side of the coin is to let people know you value the collaboration. They're getting a chance to network with other folks across different campuses. They're getting a chance to get known on different campuses. And certainly it helps to build up the opportunity pool for them, because in a lot of tough times, there are very specific positions that get filled, but there's not a whole lot of general hiring going on. Okay, so what kind of capacity plan do you put in place and start to shift the culture? One of the experiences that we've had is taking people like your system administrators and putting them into leadership training programs, whether they're EDUCAUSE or your regionals or other venues, but having them start to understand the big picture. The other is having town meetings where, from the president on down, people talk about collaboration as a value, and that gets transmitted to the whole community. It is making an investment in the people with those skill sets you know they need in order to be able to collaborate. It's having your HR departments look at education and training on a regular basis. And it's really having some advocates. You know, you need some people that are willing to shake it up and run with the ball and be a little bit aggressive and fail. So training, education, support, and really having some people willing to step out on that ice. I think that's a really good question. Is there more tension when the institutions are unequal in prestige? Does collaboration work better behind the scenes or when it's up front? I think sometimes collaboration behind the scenes is a way to get some easy wins. But the challenge with collaboration is if all you do is behind the scenes and it's not up front and it's not highly visible, it doesn't have the impact, it doesn't create and change the culture, so you're never going to get it as far along the line as you want it to go. So I think you have to take some risks on getting it out front. Prestige and brand are definitely a challenge, and we have a branding and identity task force in place right now at Olin. What we've seen is that for us, we're actually looking at doing admission across the three schools. So our admission directors are saying, how do we create the information so students understand when they go to Wellesley, Olin, or Babson, they have these other opportunities. So I think understanding how you want to market it, not having overlap and not really competing with each other is certainly an advantage. But all of us, I think, can find opportunities where we don't compete with each other that we could collaborate. Or, for instance, like MIT. You know, Olin Engineering, MIT Engineering, initially you think, uh-oh, not going to work. Well, we're small. So MIT looks at us and says, hey, great school for a feeder for our graduate programs, right? So that was one way to find a collaboration that would not have normally stuck out there. Okay, I think we're just about out of time.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.